So first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for this very interesting conference in this very nice place, which reminds me of my country, Spain. We don't have so much sun in Frankfurt. And today I will talk about spinels. We had during this week a few nice talks on spinels, starting on Monday with the talk of Ramses Chaudhry, up to yesterday afternoon with the talk of Alois Loidal and Shen-Huang Li. And today I will be presenting only one spinel system, and this is syngvanadate. This work is a collaboration with a former postdoc of mine, Tulika Maitra, who is now at the University of Twente and has been supported by the German Science Foundation. So syngvanadate, this is a spin one frustrated spin structure whose behavior is driven by a competition between spin orbital and lattice degrees of freedom. And a subject of controversy for a long time has been the kind of orbital ordering that takes place in the system. So we have studied this issue in the context of ab initio density functional theory calculation and also lattice models considerations. And this is the work I would like to present here. So as you know, the spinel structure consists of a cubic closed packed array of anions, which can be oxygen, sulfur, selenium, or tellure, and two types of cations, A and B. The A cations occupy the tetragonal positions, and the B cations occupy octahedra positions. And the interesting thing about this system is that these B atoms form tetrahedra that build a pyrochlore lattice, so we have geometric frustration in these materials. So the space group in which the spinels crystallize, this is the cubic 227, where A and B, the A and B positions are highly symmetric, so they are the same for all spinels, but the position of the anion is a UUU position. It can change from one spinel to the other, and we have a perfect spinel when this anion sits in the one quarter position. So here we are interested in having in the B position a 3D transition metal ion. And in this case, when we have a perfect spinel, the 5D orbitals just split due to the octahedral environment in triply degenerate T2G orbitals and doubly degenerate EG orbitals. The thing is, though, that most of the spinels, they are not really perfect spinels, so the oxygen is a little bit off this one quarter position. So we usually have an extra crystal field splitting of this T2G into A1G and EG pi states, and this is the so-called trigonal distortion. And we have this kind of trigonal distortion for syngvanadate. Now let me present you what do we know about syngvanadate. So first, in fact, there are already reported experiments on this material in the 70s, but Ueda took again this system and did an analysis of what's going on. And what one finds is that the system shows two successive phase transitions. The first phase transition is at about 50 Kelvin, where the system shows a transition from the cubic structure to a tetragonal structure, so it's a structural transition. And this has been also observed by the group of Alois Loidal in, Alois Loidal in Augsburg. And what happens in this transition is that this octahedra just are compressed along the C-axis, and therefore we get a new splitting into a lower dxy orbital and higher dxz, dyz orbitals. And as you see, since we have a spin one system, what we will have is that one electron will occupy this dxy orbital, but the second electron has freedom to occupy these two orbitals, and therefore we open the possibility of having orbital ordering in the system. So now cooling down in temperature at 40 K the system orders antiferromagnetic. And the kind of order that was, that has been observed is the following. One sees antiferromagnetic spin chains that alternate along the C-axis. So it's a very one-dimensional spin configuration of this antiferromagnet. I must say, though, that the experiments seem to be quite sensitive to sample preparation, and there were reports from the group of Loidal where they had single crystals that were showing no phase transition. So the system was basically remaining in a spin glass phase up to low temperatures. Also, the first reports of Sanghan Li and collaborators about their samples were that they were finding also these two successive phase transitions, but the crystal phase transition, the change of structure, so the structural phase transition at 50K was going into a tetragonal structure, which was in fact lower than the one observed by the group of Loidal and Weda. But in fact, in refinement experiments, they also in fact agree that the tetragonal structure is the same as the observed by the other groups. So we are dealing here with a system that has these two phase transitions, and we would like to understand which is the driving mechanism of these transitions and how this magnetic ordering, this very one-dimensional magnetic ordering, sets in at low temperatures. So which are the facts that we should take into account in the system? First of all, at high temperatures, we have geometrical frustration. So that means that we have a huge degeneracy of the ground state. And as we know, the system will try to take advantage of any available mechanism to basically lift this degeneracy. Secondly, the system is a 3D2 system. Therefore, correlation effects are important in these materials. And we will have not only spin, but also orbital degrees of freedom. And the third interaction that one should take into account is the spin-orbit coupling, since we have here an angular momentum, which is one, and a spin, which is one. So how can one then take into account all these facts into a theory? There have been many groups working on the theory of Singh-Vanadate by considering basically the three interactions that you would say that are the ones that take that really are important for this material. The first one is the Jahn-Teller coupling, which describes the coupling between the orbital degrees of freedom and the lattice distortions. The spin-orbital Kugel-Comsting interaction, which takes care of the super-exchange interaction between the vanadiums, and the spin-orbit coupling, as I was just mentioning in my previous transparency. So the thing is that depending on which of these interactions you consider as being the important interactions for this material, one gets different results concerning the kind of, for instance, orbital ordering that your system will show. And just let me show you three works where, in fact, this is the case. So if we start with the work of Tsunetsugu and Motome, what they did is they basically considered that there are two important interactions in this material. One is the Jahn-Teller coupling and the Kugel-Comsky interaction. And basically, these two terms compete with each other and stabilize a certain orbital ordering. So they did mean field theory on this effective model, and they find that the orbital ordering that is stabilized is the following. So this is just, I took this picture from Oleg Chernyshov. So this picture is basically, you see your spinel from the top, and basically here are the DXY orbitals that are shown. So these are the layers, the big and the small pictures correspond to different layers along the Z direction. And what you see is that there is one electron always occupying this DXY orbital, and then you have alternatively one electron that occupies the dzxx and the dyz orbital. So you see it here, it is here, this occupation of the dyz, and then in the next layer, the dzx. And therefore, what you have is what it's called an A-type antiferro orbital ordering. So the point is, though, that in this kind of orbital ordering, you have that the tetragonal symmetry that obeys this orbital ordering is a I41A symmetry, and this is lower than the tetragonal symmetry reported for these materials. And the reason for that is because this kind of orbital ordering, if you just draw this line, breaks these planes, these mirror planes along the diagonals. So this was the this is what you get if you consider these two couplings being the important ones in this material. So Oleg Chernyshov was the first to propose that, in fact, the spin-orbit coupling in these materials is important. And he considered this to be, in fact, the responsible for stabilizing a certain orbital ordering in this material. So he proposed an ionic model where he basically takes the spin-orbit coupling as an important interaction and then the Jahn-Teller coupling in a perturbatively way. And what he finds by treating this ionic model is that the orbital ordering that you get is, again, one electron in the in your dxy orbital, but the second electron is smeared out between the dyz and the dzx orbitals in order to minimize the spin orbit energy at each ion. So you see that you get a very different pattern depending on what you consider as being your the driving interactions for in this material. And of course, let's consider the third possible combination, which is spin orbit Kugel-Chomsky term plus spin orbit coupling. This is this work was done by Di Matteo and collaborators, where they consider a model with these two interactions, and they find that if you take into account Kugel-Chomsky and spin-orbit coupling for certain values of the coupling constant, you get again the same orbital pattern as Oleg Chernyshov was predicting. So the question is what we have in these materials? So what we did, in fact, this started with conversations with Oleg Chernyshov 1.5 years ago. So we thought, let's do now a calculation which is more material specific. So we do an ab initio calculation, where we will be considering, of course, both the tetragonal and the trigonal distortion, and we will be considering the effects of correlation and spin-orbit coupling one after the other. And let's see what we observe in this material. So first of all, I'm showing here only basically first LSDA calculations, and these calculations were done with full potential LAPW. And what we see is that, okay, there is a big hybridization of vanadium with oxygen at the Fermi level, but we get metal. And if we just here do the projected density of states of upon the d orbitals, you see that basically you have occupation of the 3D orbitals. So these results don't give you either that the Singh-Baradet is insulator, nor can they manage to give you the correct occupation of your orbitals. And we know that this is a drawback of DFT, because in DFT the correlations are not properly taken into account. So we have to go beyond DFT, and so beyond this LDA, and first let's do LDA plus U. And in LDA plus U, of course, then you get the correct polarization of your orbitals. So full occupation of your dxy orbital, this is your dxy, and the double degenerate dyz dxz, which is this 2, which is just half occupied. Now, from the K space properties, we cannot really tell about the possible orbital ordering in this material. We have to go to real space properties and also to the analysis of the coefficients of the wave function in order to tell about the orbital ordering. So when we do that, let me show you what one obtains. So this is the electron density calculated for Singh-Banadate in the LSDA plus U approximation. So here still we don't have yet any spin orbit coupling. It's only correlations. And what you see is the following. The pattern that one finds of orbital ordering is one electron, it's always in the dxy. So here it's the cartoon of this orbital ordering seen from the top. So one electron is in the dxy, always occupied. And the second electron is alternatively occupying the linear combination of xz plus yz and xz minus yz. So this is what you see here in one layer and the next. So one layer, the next layer, and so on and so forth. So this is, in fact, the orbital order that was predicted by Tsunetsugu and Motobe. The only difference, though, is that this orbital ordering that we find conserves the tetragonal symmetry. By Tsunetsugu and Motobe, they were breaking some mirror planes because they were considering the occupation of these orbitals and not of this combination. So what you see is that if you don't consider spin orbit coupling, but only correlation, you get this anti-orbital ordering along C and ferroorbital along AB. So let's go to the next step now and consider the spin orbit coupling in these calculations. And when you do that, as you see, the pattern, the ordering pattern, orbital ordering pattern, changes considerably. You don't have any more this A-type orbital ordering, but what you find is an orbital ordering which is exactly the same as the one you have in the cubic phase. So what you get, what you see is, in fact, an occupation, a uniform occupation of these complex orbitals, which in fact agrees to what Di Matteo and Chernyshov find. Now here is the question. Good. So we can only tell that you really get, by considering all these interactions, very different orbital ordering patterns. The question is, how can we now say which is the one that will be correct for the system? So what we calculate here is the total magnetic moment. And if you calculate the total magnetic moment, since you have a non-zero orbital moment, you get a total magnetic moment of 0.94 mV, and this compares to the experimental value that was determined from neutron diffraction experiments. So if there is, so what from these results, you can say that spin orbit coupling is important if you want to explain this total magnetic moment. But this is not the end of the story, and just let me do my comments in a few seconds about the low dimensionality of the system. So now, what else does it change when you consider that spin orbit coupling plays also a role in your system? I'm showing here the band picture of of Singh-Banadate in the LDA plus U and in the LDA plus U plus spin orbit coupling. And you see that there is a qualitative difference between including or non-including spin orbit coupling. So when you don't include the spin orbit coupling, you get this gap of about 0.3 electron volts. When you include spin orbit coupling, what happens is that you get this band pushed upwards, so you get a bigger band gap in this material, and the bands, all the bands, as you can see, just get the bandwidth gets decreased. So there is a qualitative effect in this material, in the material properties, that should be seen in experiments in order to tell whether you do whether spin orbit coupling is important or not. The lambda, the lambda we took it, it's about 13 MeV, the lambda coupling. That gives you, because you get, you get the occupation of the orbitals changes because you go into this complex space. So now what we need is what happens with the antiferromagnetic antiferromagnetic ordering, which is the one that is stabilized by this kind of orbital ordering. So if we take the orbital ordering obtained from the LSDA plus U plus SO calculation, we find that the magnetic ordering that it is stabilized is the one that is also observed experimentally, which is this this one-dimensional change of antiferromagnetically aligned. But if you take, without spin orbit coupling, so if you take the LDA plus U calculations with this A-type orbital ordering, you also get this antiferromagnetic ordering as the one which is stabilized. So in this sense, these cannot, you cannot tell from this ordering which should be the orbital ordering in this material. But let me show you some calculations on the magnetic excitations that should be able to tell you more about the orbital ordering in this material. So these are these results are from Natasha Perkins and Olga Sikora. What they did is the following. They considered, they calculate the excitation spectrum for this material, so the magnetic excitations, by considering spin orbit coupling and without considering it. So, and they do spin wave theory. So this is the kind of magnetic excitations that you get with normal linear spin wave theory. And now when you put spin orbit coupling, what you find is that your bands get split and you get a real narrowing of your magnetic bands, which is very analogous to what you see in the electronic properties, this narrowing of your electronic bands. So if the system, if in the system the spin orbit coupling is important, then the magnetic experiments should see this kind of magnetic excitations. And I think there are some results, so I hope in a while some comments from Sung-Hung Lee about that. So you see that there are various remarkable differences whether you consider in this material the spin orbit coupling or not. So I think that I'm at the end. And I just come to the conclusions, the following conclusions, that in this material, correlation effects are important, the Jahn-Teller distortion is important, and the spin orbit coupling makes a big difference in the both in the electronic and magnetic properties, whether you consider it or not. What we find is that if you include the spin orbit coupling in your calculation, there will be not anymore an A-type orbital ordering, but you get the orbital ordering also predicted by Oleg Chernyshov. And what we checked is that this orbital ordering favors this, the antiferromagnetic ordering observed at lower temperatures, and also the total magnetic moment is in the same order of magnitude as the one of the experiment. Now, my last comment is the following. This antiferromagnetic ordering in these materials is very one-dimensional. So if you take the system as being very one-dimensional, of course, the fluctuations will also give you values of the values of the magnetic moment, which are lower than the maximum. So still, I think that this system needs for experiments, or at least to check whether this spin orbit coupling is important or not. So And with that, I would like to end my talk, and I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. We have lots of time for questions. Daniel?
Yeah. I want to make some comments about this story and also a couple of questions. Comment is the following, that these two possible type of orbital ordering are not the only one on the market, but there is also another one which was similar to what we did with Takashi and Mizukawa for in GTI-204. And Takashi also, Mizukawa suggested that it may be also the case here. And to check this possibility, we also carried out similar calculations 2 years ago, actually, already, including spin orbit and so on. And it was done by two hands, so to say. One of them was in Köln by Hua Wu, and another is in Dresden by Sasha Ireshka. And a disturbing thing, that's also why we didn't publish it 2 years ago already, is that they used essentially the same starting points, but somewhat different codes, and the results were rather different. So Hua Wu obtained results very similar to yours, but Ireshka obtained something, orbitals which are more like trigonal. So trigonal effects were much more important. That's point number one. Yeah. And comment number two is that experimentally there is, for this zinc vanadate, there are no single crystals. So actually, there are no good structural data. As far as I know, Paola tried to measure it, and I don't know what the bottom line, but as far as I know, there was no good data, finally. But there is similar system with magnesium, MnV2O4, for which people do have single crystals and did much more careful structural studies, and they obtained that the symmetry is really lower than tetragonal. So there are some mirror planes missing, so that's more consistent with Sumitsugo-Matome or maybe with Mizukawa structure. So that's, what can you comment on that? And also a question in connection with that. What about trigonal splitting? How strong is it? How relevant? How important is it?
Yeah.
And what can you say about this magnesium study? Manganese.
Okay, so about the trigonal distortion, and I talked to Yaresko because we have been exchanging our results, because he was doing also this system, and I was doing this system, and he was doing that with LMTO, and I was doing that with LAPW. And we agreed at the end that, in fact, his results are also very similar to this result. And in fact, you see it here, this trigonal distortion. I mean, you see that.
How important is it really here?
It's important because you see, you get.
So you wrote this orbitals XZ plus IYZ, but if it's trigonal, then it should be different combination.
This was just the cartoon, but in fact, the orbitals that I always use this notation, because I always go to the local reference frame where I can work with this notation here. But you see it here that it is important, because you get this, you see, you get this tilting of your orbitals that you wouldn't get if you didn't have this trigonal distortion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, that's why I put here, in fact, the orbital ordering in the cubic phase, you just see this trigonal distorted phase. So this is one thing, this is important. The second question was...
But is it really, just a question. It's important for detailed type of orbital, but is it really important for stabilizing this particular type of complex orbitals, or it's not?
Okay, so...
Is it crucial, or it's not?
Well, if you don't put it, for instance, if you don't put it, and let me show you now without the spin orbit coupling, if you don't put it here, what you get is this orbital ordering, which is not the orbital...
Even with spin-orbit coupling?
No. With spin-orbit coupling, this orbital ordering is gone. You don't get this...
No, I mean just with spin-orbit coupling, but without trigonal distortion. What would you get?
Without trigonal distortion, I haven't done the calculations, but so then you should just have to consider basically the tetrahedral interaction. And what I think that you would get is this tilting would be gone.
Okay.
This is what you would get. And the second question was about the manganese system.
Yeah. Manganese V2O4.
Magnesium.
Not magnesium, but manganese V2O4. MnV2O4.
But that's magnetic. Yeah. That's
it's magnetic, but the claim is that this AB interaction for this particular case is not really important, and the basic properties are very, very similar to Zinc vanadate onto Mg vanadate. That's actually, I also asked the same question, it's magnetic, but that's Katsufuji and collaborator. They claim that it's not really crucial.
Manganese, I haven't looked at that, but maybe I can say something about the structure. How good is the structure? So what we always do before doing the calculation is we have to minimize the, so we have to optimize the crystal.
You optimize it, yeah?
Exactly. Otherwise, you start with the structure with big forces, which is not good. So in these calculations, the structure is already optimized. So even if you if we get from the experimentalists a crystal structure which is not that good, we before doing the real calculation, we minimize, so we optimize the structure.
And you reproduce this real structure, both with spin orbit coupling for Alex's structure or without spin orbit coupling for Tsuneizuka-Matome, it's also optimized in both cases?
Yeah, no. The first thing that you do before doing a calculation, you what you do is you calculate the forces of between your atoms. And then you see how...
Right, right, but they would depend on the structure, on the orbital...
They depend on the functional that you are considering, whether you are considering LDA, LDA plus U, LDA plus spin orbit coupling. So we have done that only with without U and without spin orbit coupling, because then it becomes very complicated.
I see.
Yes, there is a trigonal distortion, yeah.
Another...
Right. Exactly.
Locally.
So what you have is basically, you take your octahedra, they are a little bit...
What I want to ask, there are huge, George pointed out, huge changes in the band structure,
yeah,
when there is a very small spin orbit coupling, but also in the magnetic, in the spin wave spectrum, and that's also something I do.
Well, these are different calculations, so one has to be careful about
that. So it means that all in the spin wave spectrum, the orbitals are changing, everything's changing.
The spin wave spectrum is made without really taking any ab initio input. This spin wave spectrum is just considering a cluster. So that means you cannot really do a one-to-one comparison between these two calculations. This is a pure model calculation. There's
okay.
No ab initio input here. I just wanted to show that the features are similar, but the orders of magnitude, one should be very careful. It's definitely two independent calculations.
Can you get a spin gap, different question then, can you get the spin gap out of the ab initio calculation?
A spin gap?
Yeah,
no,
so the easy axis anisotropy, I guess it's easy axis.
Well, spin gap, I mean, this is the only thing that you can do is, no, it's the spin, in the spin polarized calculation, and you get your electron gap, but not the spin gap. I mean, you can get J's, but not magnitudes of spin gaps, because you don't calculate excitation in ab initio. It's all ground state properties. Yeah.
I'd like to just quickly comment on this spin wave excitation spectrum. Experimentally, in fact, we can say that these dotted dashed lines are more close to the experimental data.
They would agree more with...
More with the experimental data. Instead of just a 2-2 band with a huge gap, we have this extended spin wave is up to high energy, and then so that's experimentally observed. So I think it would be nice if you can extract the J's from your model and
you
can directly compare.
And consider also the cadmium.
Right, that's right.
I think Paolo wants.
Yes, I just want to show some one slide.
Are you on one?
I'm on. Yes. I mean, this piece of work was not very satisfactory, but I just want to show this is some higher resolution part of diffraction on zinc vanadate. It shows the phase transition. So this is the cubic phase, and the tetragonal phase should have a splitting here. And basically what the data show is that even at low temperature, there's about 50% of cubic phase persisting. So if you show the number, and what it translates back into magnetic moment, because the intensity of the magnetic peak is proportional to the square, is that really the magnetic moment of the tetragonal phase, assuming the cubic phase has no moment, is mm-hmm. more close to one Bok magnetron than 0.6.
I see. Okay. Okay. Then we would agree more. It would agree more is what we get. I mean, we get 0.9. Okay, yeah. That's nice. Thank you.
So this is like phase separated?
Okay. Yes, I think, it's not really thermodynamic phase separated.
For the questions, George.
What about the cubic phase?
Well, the cubic phase, here it is. This is the cubic phase. Yeah, this is the calculation of the cubic phase. And this is the kind of, that's why I just wanted to show you the comparison. I mean, if you see, because these are probabilities, right? I cannot draw a complex orbital. What I'm showing here are probabilities of finding your electron in a certain position in real space.
So you did LSTA plus U with spin orbit in the cubic phase, and what then was your, you found a no magnetic moment, or what did you find?
For the cubic phase?
Yeah.
No, for the cubic phase, sorry. The cubic phase here, it's only the LDA plus U. I didn't put spin orbit coupling.
Okay, but even then, so what's your magnetic moment then? What do you have, some spin ordering, or what do you have?
I heard. I'm sorry, I didn't check that. I haven't. Here, I only wanted to calculate the orbital ordering, but I didn't check about what kind of magnetic ordering. I can do that.
Assuming that it's zero.
It's not zero, definitely. Yeah.
But what should the order? But you don't know what kind of ordering. That's right.
There's no. Yeah, I mean. Well, it's not ordered, the cubic phase. No, it's not ordered. I mean,
yes.
It's just.
Yes, the trigonal distortion doesn't change the distances between the. Doesn't change frustration.
Frustration remains with the trigonal. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. I will do that.
But of course, this has to be a magnetic calculation, right? You must have assumed some sort of order. This has to be a magnetic.
We assume just the one that we have in the lower phase, but it's very artificial.
Further questions? Well, if there aren't, let's thank Rosé again.